Hello and welcome to the Anti Football Podcast. My name is Chris. As always, I'm joined by the lovely Harry. It's lovely and snowy at the moment, but
not with me.
Is it not? Is it not snowing down there?
No.
Alright, it's just been snowing basically non-stop for the past couple of days.
Oh, Storm Darcy, is that what it's called?
Is it Storm Darcy?
Yeah.
I don't know. They always give them fucking weird names. Like, it's a storm. Why are you giving it a fucking female name? Like, I don't get it. Like,
names as well. That's how you identify them.
Well, yeah, true. But, like, yeah.
Katrina.
Yeah, well, I know Katrina, but, like, why would you give it, like, a human name? It don't make sense, like, yeah.
What would you want to call it? Hurricane 14,069 or something?
Well, I don't know, but, like, you wouldn't call it Hurricane Brian, would you? Like,
it's usually female names.
I know it's usually female names, but, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's just weird. Like, can you not think of, like, something else? Like, I know Americans have, like, when they name, like, military operations, they basically just describe the operation, like, fucking, oh, I wonder what Operation Desert Storm's going to be. Can you just give hurricanes names like that instead of fucking...
Okay, but by the same token, the Manhattan Project.
Yeah, exactly.
That doesn't give away what it is.
Oh, yeah, true. Mind you, they're not going to exactly want to give away fucking the Manhattan Project, are they? I mean, the place where they did it didn't even fucking exist when they were doing it. Like...
Bikini Atoll.
Yeah. Well, it didn't exist. Like, the town. It wasn't a town. It was just like a desert. Well, I'm not surprised. I mean...
You're on about...
Yeah. Well, are we on about the same things here?
Well, they tested it on, like... Do you know what the Manhattan Project was testing for?
Yeah, it was the nuclear bombs, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they did it in, like, some fucking random desert, didn't they?
They did it all over the place. They did it, Los Alamos, it says, in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I swear, like, that town, like, didn't exist at the time. Like... It wasn't a town, it was just land.
Oh, okay.
Like, it was only after the fact. Because they wanted it to, like, not be able to trace back and shit.
Have you heard the SpongeBob theory?
Well, go on, tell us the SpongeBob theory, Harry.
Well, you know, we've just been talking about, like, nuclear testing. Apparently they tested it on something called Bikini Atoll. Now, people believe that SpongeBob is, like, a... Because the fish and that can talk, they believe it's mutated humans from the nuclear test.
Wait, is that an actual thing?
That's an actual theory. Yeah.
They're mutated humans.
Bikini Bottom and Bikini Atoll, that's how they've sort of linked it.
A mutated human, you taking the piss.
That's what they think it is.
Oh yeah, because, like, there's never been any case in animation ever where, animals can talk. Well, that's the first instance ever.
Also, you know the mushroom cloud thing that they always show?
Yeah.
That's from Bikini Atoll.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the footage of the area being exploded.
Right.
So that also links it. And obviously, Bikini Atoll, Bikini Bottom.
Yeah. Yeah, this is all bollocks. Of course it's not a fucking nuclear test site. I'll tell you what, some conspiracy, especially TV conspiracy theories, are just full of shit, aren't they? Like, if you want a proper conspiracy theory, the moon landing footage wasn't real. I'm 100% convinced of that.
There's some really dark ones, like the Rugrats one.
Go on, what was the Rugrats one then?
So, it's dark, so I don't know whether you want to, like, keep it in.
Well, I'll cut it out if it's too dark.
Basically, Angelica?
Yeah.
Basically, all the kids died in, premature or stillbirth death. And okay. like the twins are male and female because the auntie was expecting, and obviously they didn't know what the gender was. So Angelica made up what the she didn't know what the gender was, so she just made two twins.
Right.
And then you have the dad is always making like kids' toys in the basement because of the lost son he never had.
Oh yeah, it's not because of his son at all. No.
I can't. I remember reading it years ago, so I may be leaving out crucial bits, but there's videos out now.
Yeah, it's just bollocks. What? Can't, like, you know.
They can't just take things on face value. It has to have some extra meaning.
Yeah, well, I mean, some conspiracy theories are fun to think about. Like, because if you don't have, like, all the information and stuff like that, like the Diana ones, for example. But, like, you know, shit like that, it has to have, like, some semblance of, like, you know, believability or, like, realism in it. Like, they're just making shit up at that point, like.
Yeah.
Like, what fucking evidence is there that they all come from stillbirths and they're not just kids, right?
I don't know. I may be leaving out crucial bits that made people think that, but they just can't take it on face value.
Yeah, it's sort of bollocks that. Like, I do like certain conspiracy theories. I think they're good. I mean, I listen to the fucking conspiracy theory podcast, so I think that's really good. I remember one episode where they were on about, like, that diamonds weren't actually rare. I remember that because they were saying stuff like, they're one of the most common, like, stones in the world or something like that. One of the most common gemstones. Like.
Well, it's just carbon, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But to make it from coal takes an immense amount of pressure. And
oh, yeah, it takes a lot of pressure, money, time. Like.
And the chance of it even happening is pretty low.
Oh, yeah, so it's easier to just mine them.
Yeah.
But people are saying, you know, like, because there's only this one company, I can't remember what it's called, but they've basically got this, like, monopoly over diamonds, so they can basically charge whatever they want. And it was something to do with, like, in World War II, like, they were seen as stuff like, you know, oh, get a diamond ring so if you die in war, like, the diamond will last forever or something like that. Like,
what?
So it was meant to be like, you know, you give it to, like, your lass, and then if you go off into war and you die, she'll still have the diamond forever to remember you by or something like that. Because that was, like, part of the marketing campaign, and that was, like, the start of the myth that diamonds are forever, even though they're not. Like, because there was this some guy who did, like, this experiment to see if, like, they really did last forever. Like, see if they decreased in value or something, and they did, so.
Well, it's crystallized carbon, so. And carbon is the most common, what do you call it, gas in this atmosphere.
Yeah.
Without carbon, you can't have life.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's common as piss, honestly. Like, I mean, like, you know, I won't be surprised if, you know, they weren't rare.
Well, I guess Reddit recently uncovered a conspiracy theory.
Well, was it really a conspiracy theory? Because it's pretty out in the open, like.
Well, yeah, because immediately after people started making money, they closed it down. So it's kind of like the rich keep rich, the poor must stay poor.
Yeah, but that's not really a conspiracy theory, because we know it happened, like.
Yeah, but there's no such thing as a self-made billionaire, then, is there?
Oh, no, 100% not. No.
This is the conspiracy hour.
Ah, yeah, we should start a conspiracy theory podcast.
All right. Yeah,
that'd be great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do a bit of research before. Yeah.
Oh, that'd be class. I mean, we should do that when fucking season's over. I mean, there's a shit ton of football at the moment, but, like, you know, in, like, June, where we'll be bored as piss, there'll be no football on. Like, we should do that. That'd be great.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Oh, there was another one what I was listening to about what's his face? JFK. And I watched the film on it. It was really good. It's like 3 hours long or something like that. But it's like basically, you know, you'll come out of it convinced that he definitely wasn't a lone gunman, Lee Harvey Oswald.
What, you think he was, it was pinned on him?
Well, I don't know if it was pinned on him, but, like, it was, he definitely didn't act alone, is what I'll say. There's definitely some stuff being moved from behind the scenes. Like,
what, from Jackie Kennedy? Of his extramarital affairs?
Well, I mean, I know one of the conspiracy theories, the one that JFK said in the film I watched, they're basically saying it was Lyndon B. Johnson that did it. Okay. Which, I mean, he has the motive.
I thought you were going to, like, tie in, like, Jackie Kennedy because you found out about JFK and Marilyn Monroe or something.
Well, I mean, you know.
There probably is a conspiracy out of that.
Oh, yeah, there's definitely some.
What's this film called?
JFK.
It's just called JFK.
Yeah, it was 91, I think it came out in. It's about 3 hours long, which is good. Basically, it was because JFK wanted he wanted to get rid of the CIA. The CIA worked with Lyndon B. Johnson to get rid of him.
Now why would that be covered up?
Yeah, exactly.
Why did they pin it on Lee Harvey Oswald?
Well, because they needed someone to pin it on.
No, I know, but why?
And he was, I think he was like an ex-Soviet. Like, he used to live in the Soviet Union or something like that.
Well, that makes sense.
But, I mean, like, people who were there say, like, oh, they never heard a gunshot or something like that. Like, or, you know, they were around the area where Oswald was supposed to have been. Like,
I just remember the Family Guy joke about him.
Well, say your Family Guy, your hook.
Well, have you not seen it where the...
I'm not a Family Guy fan, I'll be quite honest. Well,
basically, you have... In America, they have something called Mayo Milk Cheese. And basically, he's a big hamburger with a human body, and he gets assassinated in an open top car, and then his wife starts eating him.
I think the best part about that is that I now know about the existence of Mayo McCheese. I mean, what the fuck is that? It's fucking Burger King shit. Like, Mayo McCheese? Yeah. Is that an actual thing?
Yeah, so it's the mayor of McDonald's band.
What the fuck is that? Jesus Christ!
It's like we don't have Grimace over here.
What is that? That is terrifying. That's like almost as bad as Mr. Blobby. Like, what is that?
We don't have the hamburger stealer here. We don't have hamburger helper. We don't have...
Well, thank fuck we don't have Mayo McCheese. Like, Jesus Christ. He looks like some of what you'd see on, what was that kid's show? Like, fucking Gruesome Tales for
demented
kids or something like that. Yeah, that was it. Oh, that show was banging.
Yeah, imagine they. Well, do you think it was scary?
Well, I think it was scary. The animation
added to it a lot. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it looked minging, but, like, in a good way.
Hmm. They have, Grimace over there, which is, like, a purple monster. Or...
Grimace?
Yeah. We don't really have mascots, do we?
Well, when you said Grimace, my mind immediately went to, oh, what's his name? That hockey mascot. That looks like the fucking Sugar Puff person.
What?
Oh, what's his name? Is it like Grizzly or something?
No, Grimace is like a furry jelly top.
Gritty, that's it.
Gritty, what was that?
It's the mascot for the Philadelphia Flyers.
He looks cuddly. It's like a fucking puppet.
No, but he acts like fucking Mr. Blobby, like, you know. Like, I remember seeing a video of him, and he was ice skating with a kid. And he just fucking shoves the kid into a wall. Like... And, like, another instance where there's, like, this guy who's, like, got, like, four coffees or something like that in one of them, like, tray things. He just fucking smacks them all out of his hand. Like...
Jesus Christ. There's one that Partick Thistle has that's fucking...
Oh, that mascot. Oh, do you remember when West Brom had that fucking boiler?
Yeah.
Oh, that was great. And who was it who had a pie? Was it Wigan?
Wigan
had a pie as a mascot, I think, one time.
What?
Yeah.
I hate that Harry that...
Well, because they eat pie sandwiches in Wigan.
Pie sandwiches?
Yeah.
What's a pie in bread?
Yeah.
What?
Well, it'll usually be in a tea cake. Not like actual like sliced bread.
Oh, what? I'm searching this up. A pie sandwich.
Yeah. In Wigan. They call it a pie barm, because Lancashire. But, you know. Yeah, it's just a pie in a tea cake.
That's not a tea cake.
Is it? It's... Oh, it's piss off. It's a tea cake. That is a tea cake.
A roll, isn't it?
That is a tea cake. If you're from Lancashire, you call it a barm cake because you're inbred. But if you're from anywhere else, you call it a tea cake. It's not a fucking bread roll.
A tea cake is like a...
A bread roll's what you have for your fucking soup.
A tea cake to me is like a sweet bun.
Nah, you're wrong. You're wrong.
But so what do you call a sweet bun then?
A sweet bun?
Is that what you call it?
Just the sweet bun, yeah. I don't know what you mean.
You don't call that a tea cake? Like a scone?
Oh! A scone's a scone, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's a tea cake. With quite a cream in it.
Oh, you're on about current tea cakes.
Oh?
Yeah, current tea cakes are that.
Yeah, but that's a roll, what you've just shown me.
No, that's a tea cake.
When you say tea cake, I think of, like, a cup of tea and a cake. So something sweet.
Well, no, you've got current tea cakes, which are sweet.
You're probably on about tea cake as in tea meaning, like, dinner.
No, I'm not. You've got a current tea cake, which is what you're saying. It's, like, sort of like a scone. But then you've got a tea cake, which is bread.
Why is it called a tea cake? Because you have it at dinner and you call dinner tea.
Well, that's just what it is. Oh, well, not. You're saying you call it dinner, you call dinner tea, as if that's not the right thing.
No, I... No. Well, I call it dinner, but...
Well, it's breakfast, dinner, tea.
What?
It's breakfast, dinner, tea. That's what it is. That's the order.
Yeah, but you can have an afternoon tea.
Well, if you're a raging Tory, you can, yeah. Or over 70, but...
No, I'm just...
You can have a cup of tea.
You might as well just call it morning meal, afternoon meal, evening meal.
Well, no, because it's breakfast, dinner, tea. That's what it is.
Yeah, I know what you mean when you say that. I just call it dinner.
Well, you're wrong. So do you call it lunch then?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you're wrong. Why?
Wait, what do you call lunch then? What do you call...
Dinner. That's your dinner.
What?
You have your dinner in afternoon, and then you have your tea in evening.
So, do you use supper?
No.
No, you don't. Okay.
Why do you?
No.
Oh. So there's three meals. Your breakfast in the morning, your dinner at lunch, your dinner at, you know, your midday time, and no, then your tea in the evening.
That's lunch.
No, it's not.
If you say dinner to anyone outside of your region, I'll be like, okay, what are you having, like burger and chips? Rather than like a sandwich, because you have something light at lunch.
Nah.
You call it dinner, so what?
It's your dinner, yeah. You have your dinner in the day, you know, afternoon, midday-ish time.
So what do you call something that you have after dinner that's sweet?
What, your pudding?
Yeah, I'll say that.
Yeah. Well, I thought you'd say bloody dessert with you being a fucking no. Southern bloody twat. No. Anyway, we're 20 minutes in. Have we to talk about football?
Yeah, sure, why not?
Yeah. Well, let's start talking about football. We'll glaze over this first match. We won't spend too much time on it. We won't dwell on it. Burnley 0, Man City 2. It was a pretty grim watch from the perspective of a Burnley fan at the very least. You know, but at the end of the day, we're playing Man City. I'd have snapped your hand off for a 2-0 loss at the start of the game, I'll be honest with you, considering the spankers 5-0 every time we play them. It was just, you know, City did what they had to do and we couldn't do anything because they were too good. Like, their bench cost more than our entire squad put together, including loan players. So, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I wasn't expecting anything.
No. Yeah, it wasn't... I mean, City have got a really deep squad, so I think that you, like, if we're going to talk about FA Cup, you can't really rotate, so...
Oh, yeah. Well, if you look at his performance yesterday, we were absolutely shite, and it just proves that a second team is shite, right? But, you know, I mean, I'm not too upset about it. I mean, you know, like, we moved on, and City are the ones to beat by far this season. I mean, you know, we'll get on to a more important game for them at the very least in a bit. But, you know, the 5 points at the top of the table with a game in hand, you know, they've only lost two games all season in the league. And the last game that they lost was in November. Like, you know, they've really sorted out the defence with, you know, Ruben Diaz coming in and, you know, being one of the signings of the season. I think it's got to be fair to say.
Stones has massively improved.
Yeah, John Stones has really stepped up, considering he looked, you know, useless, basically. You know. Well, you know, it was looking leakier than a bloody nun's arsehole at this point. Like, And then you've got like Laporte, who's still, you know, looking like a very good centre half. Got Cancelo, who's really improved from, you know, the start of the season, where it was a bit dodgy, but he's looked very good.
Got rid of Otamendi at the start of the season. I've always rated him.
Well, I mean, you know, I mean, he was getting on a bit, and, you know, when you look at the centre halves that they have at the moment, he just wasn't as good. Like, they probably got rid of Otamendi to fund Diaz.
He went for free.
Did he?
Yep.
All right.
Benfica.
Oh, I don't know then. He might have just not wanted to renew his contract, considering he wasn't.
Oh wait, no. Actually, I think he was part of the Diaz deal. Actually, never mind.
Yeah, I know Vertonghen went on a free. That might be who he's thinking of.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, I mean, you know, there's not really too much to talk about in this game, really. Another Gundogan assist, who, you know, we want to talk about players stepping up this season. I mean, he has really stepped up his game this season, Gundogan. I think last season, I really didn't rate him. I thought he was, shite. But, like, you know, he really has stepped up his game this season. I think the, you know, passing range, the, you know, the shots that he's taking, the risks that he's taking, you know, they weren't there last season. And he's really, you know, it feels like he's more of an adventurous player now. And it feels like more like the Gundogan who we saw at Dortmund, where, you know, everyone was ranting and raving over him, saying, you know, he's the next Xavi or, you know, Toni Kroos or whatever. It feels like now he's really started to kick on, whereas the last couple of seasons, he's definitely stalled at Man City, I think it's fair to say.
Yeah, I mean, I remember last season complaining about why was Guardiola playing him all the time. Maybe it's because he did see behind the scenes what kind of player he actually is.
Mm.
This season, he's been able to show it because he's allowed to go forward a lot more.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, and I think it's that's probably partially to do with Kevin De Bruyne's injury. The fact that Gundogan's allowed more freedom. I think, especially with, you know, Fernandinho featuring less and less, they sort of needed someone else to cover with, you know, whoever's playing that defensive midfielder role. I feel like, you know, and that probably hampered Gundogan quite a bit when you had Kevin De Bruyne going forward on his own almost to join the attack. And I feel like, you know, between Gundogan and Foden, who we'll get onto when we talk about the Liverpool game, we really have seen Man City midfielders step up in the absence of Kevin De Bruyne.
Well, I've got a question for you about Foden. Where do you think his best position is? Out wide or in the centre?
I'd say definitely, well, not definitely, but I think he's better off in the centre, personally.
But he played out wide against Liverpool.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong, I think he's one of those players what can play anywhere. I think sort of similarly to Jack Grealish. I think, you know, wherever you put him, he will have that sort of free roaming role in the final third. And I think that's where really he would suit best. I think especially if you put Foden and Grealish on the same pitch, you know, potentially for England, then you've got two players who really could pop up anywhere at any time in the attacking third.
Mm-hmm.
I think you'd be better off with Foden not shackling him to a certain position, to a certain role, and just letting him free roam around the pitch. Just letting him do his thing, basically. Because he is a very special talent, is Foden.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. Well, I mean, we'll get on to that.
Well, Guardiola has put him above Messi, hasn't he?
Yeah, I think he said he was the best young talent he's ever worked with, which, you know, I'll take that with a pinch of salt. I mean, you know, Fordham is definitely a special talent, and I think, you know, he will definitely become a world-class player, you know, capable of getting into any side in the world. But to put him on the level as of one of the greatest of all time, and this is 2 years ago when he said it, so, like, you know. If he wasn't Man City manager, I don't think he would have made the same comments. If he wasn't Man City manager at the time.
How old is he? 21, 22?
I think he's 21 at the moment.
And he walks into that City team.
Hmm.
In a very, very strong midfield.
Hmm.
I mean, it's different comparing Foden and Messi, because Messi's in a more advanced position getting more goals, whereas Foden is in midfield and he's not going to get in those positions as often, is he? Mm. He is, I think he's a top scorer, isn't he?
I'm not sure. Well, I think it might be Gundogan, but I'm not certain on that. I know Gundogan's got quite a few goals for City this season. I'll have to double check, though. Yeah, it's Gundogan on 9, or at least in the league, it's Gundogan on 9, Sterling on 8, and then Foden and Mahrez on 5.
Damn, okay. How many has he got? He's got 10 goals this season.
Wow.
In all competitions.
Yeah.
And the two top scorers are Gundogan and Sterling on 11. I mean, if you're just a step below them two.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, don't get me wrong. I think that he's definitely a special talent. But I'm hesitant to put him on the same level as one of the greatest of all time, yeah. Don't get me wrong, in 2 or 3 years, we might be having a different conversation. But, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, we'll get more into Foden in the Liverpool game that's, you know, happened later on in the week. I mean, again, we'll move on to Fulham and Leicester. Again, there's not really too much to say, really. I mean, just the quality of this Leicester side showed against the quality of the Fulham side. Leicester have the better players and they play better.
Yeah, that was pretty much the case. Yeah. Well, Kelechi and Acho getting the goal. Well, actually, goals came from two unlikely sources, really.
Hmm.
James Justin, what a player.
Yeah, it was a really good goal from James Justin. I think he's definitely going to be on the fringes of the England squad, definitely. I think the fact that he can play on both sides of the defence could help out. What's that?
I can only think of one or two players above him at the moment in that position.
Well, I think the fact that he can play right back and left back definitely really helps him out.
Well, he's not going to get right back.
Well, no, but, you know, there's still quite a lot of competition at left.
Yeah.
You know, you've got Ben Chilwell at Chelsea playing, you know, really good football. You've got Luke Shaw playing probably the best football of his career. Aaron Cresswell is someone who's starting to get mentioned now. West Ham fans are raving over him. He's playing brilliantly for them. You've got Matty Target at Aston Villa. Even someone like Charlie Taylor, if he can get over his injury problems, you know, could be in the conversation, I'll say. But I think Justin definitely makes a good account for himself to be in that left-back position. And as you mentioned, the other scorer, Iheanacho, to be honest with you, I'm disappointed with Iheanacho. I thought this season will be the season where he finally kicked on. I think the second half of last season, we really saw him really kick on and play well, you know, live up to the potential that, you know, we saw of him during his Man City days, you know, where he dropped off to provide for Jamie Vardy. But I think, you know, this season, he's really not stepped up in the way that I thought he was going to do and have a partnership with Vardy that I thought he was going to do. You know, 12 games in, you know, he's made 12 appearances in the Premier League. He's got one goal and no assists. For a forward, that is a very poor bit of end product, to say the least.
I don't really see much about him at City, to be honest. So, him... I don't know, like, I don't feel like he fits at Leicester. I don't know why they really bought him. I know he didn't get much time off the bench at City,
Well, I think he was meant to be the sort of Jamie Vardy's successor. I believe they bought him when he was, you know, 20, 21-ish. And he was meant to be, you know, the person who took over from Vardy. But obviously Vardy has gone on longer than Leicester thought he would have done. And Iheanacho hasn't kicked on quite like they thought he would have done. I just think that he's been sort of thrust into too high of a level too soon. I think that, you know, a season in the Championship perhaps would have done him good, you know, like a couple of seasons ago. I think it's probably a bit too late for that now. But I think he just needs a fresh start somewhere, Iheanacho, because, you know, the second half of last season, it looked like, you know, the player that, you know, people saw in him was starting to come out, but this season it's really not been happening for him. I think he needs a fresh start somewhere.
Where do you have in mind?
I'm not really too sure, to be honest with you. Like, you know, I think probably like a lower half Premier League club would, you know, suit him. Someone like, you know, I don't know, somewhere like Brighton, for example, or Crystal Palace. You know, depending on how injury prone he is, you know, or, you know, who wants to come in for him. We could be seeing Danny Ings potentially being moved on from Southampton. You know, he could be a decent replacement there. I could see him and Adams having a decent partnership. But I think, you know, especially for the level where Leicester are at the moment, which is, you know, contending for the Champions League, you know, playing European football, wanting to do that consistently, I don't think he's right for that level, Iheanacho. And especially if, you know, Jamie Vardy got a long-term injury or, you know, he suddenly drops off because, you know, let's not forget, he is, what is he? Is he 34, 35? So he's probably 35, yeah. So, like, you know, he has adapted his game, Vardy, a lot, don't get me wrong, to increase his longevity. But realistically, he's only got one or two seasons left.
Like
at that level.
I mean, that's that push, yeah. Well, you can see he's struggling with injuries this season and how that's affected Leicester's form.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I think, you know, people talk about Harry Kane at Spurs, but I think Vardy is probably just as reliant on Vardy as Spurs are on Kane.
Yeah. I mean, they're still getting goals without him. And still winning games.
And just a quick one before we move on as well. James Maddison getting two assists. We've got so much talent in that attacking third. For England, anyway. It's going to be really hard. It's going to be really interesting to see who Southgate picks in those attacking positions, especially for the Euros, you know. You know, we're talking about James Maddison, who's been in the form of his life at Leicester. He's been brilliant for Leicester. But we're talking about, you know, leaving him at home because, you know, we've also got players like Grealish and Foden and even Ross Barkley, who have all been excellent, in excellent form for the club. So, you know, we could potentially be seeing a player as talented as Maddison not even be included in the squad, especially if Southgate is going to play five at the back, which means he's going to want a lot more defenders than attackers.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, who would you pick at the moment?
Well, I think Foden has to be in there.
Agreed.
I think Grealish has to be in there.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't watch too much Dortmund, so I don't know how Sancho's doing. I know he had a poor start to the season, but he's starting to kick on now.
It's still nowhere near the level he was at last season.
I think for me, it's between Maddison and Sancho, because I think, you know, you've got to have Sterling, you've got to have Rashford, you've got to have Grealish and Foden. Obviously, Kane's going. And then, you know, you have one of, like, Calvert-Lewin or Danny Ings or someone like that. So then it's between between Maddison and Sancho for that final place, I think.
I wouldn't take Sancho.
Would you not?
No.
Why? You know, I mean, I've not been watching too much Dortmund, you know, so I don't know why, you know, he's not performing as much. Have they had like a changing coach or something like that? I'm not aware of. Oh, right.
Seeing Favre at the start of the season, he was absolutely shocking. I remember Stuttgart beating 5-0, and that was why they sacked him.
Ah, right.
And then they brought in Terzic, that was it. And there's more reliance on youth players like Mokoko, Giovanni Reyna, Sancho.
Big fan of Giovanni Reyna, me. I mean, it's a shame that, you know, he doesn't want to play for England because I think he's a talent as well.
Is he eligible?
He's eligible, but he's already come out and said that he wants to represent the USA. So
he's got a better chance now to represent.
Yeah. Exactly.
To represent America than England. You've had players like Jude Bellingham who haven't really lived up to their name. You've had injury crisis.
Well, I mean, you said Jude Bellingham hasn't lived up to his name. I mean, he's only, like, what, 17?
Yeah, but for a club to go, oh, yeah, we're going to retire his shirt.
Oh, yeah, but that's Birmingham just being tin pot. In honour of Jude Bellingham's number 22 shirt number, we're going to be 22nd in the league. That's just sums up Birmingham. It doesn't really sum up Jude Bellingham. He had one season with him.
Yeah. I mean, Haaland's also eligible for England, isn't he?
Has he not represented Norway at senior level yet?
Yeah, he would have by now, yeah.
Well, mind you, if it's in friendlies, it don't count.
Yeah, he's played 4 Nation League match.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah, but I mean, you know, like, realistically, would he represent England, like?
He was born here, he was born in Leeds.
Oh, yeah, true.
He's a Leeds United fan.
Yeah. But, I mean, we have arguably the best striker in the world at the moment, so.
Yeah, but Haaland's still firing on all fronts. He's got 14.
Oh, yeah, no, don't get me wrong. I still rate Erling Haaland, don't get me wrong. What I'm saying is it's not like we're crying out for a striker.
No.
Can we get fucking, I don't know, Upamecano, can we get him to represent England? Or Konate?
Well, Sanchez only got 3 goals and 7 assists this season, which does sound good, but considering he was in double figures at this point last season.
How many appearances is that?
18 games.
18 games, so it's still, you know, a goal contribution. It's better than a goal contribution every other game.
Yes. But he was like, he, I think he had more goal contributions than games last season.
Mm, yeah.
17 goals, 22 assists.
Yeah. I mean, personally, you know, I'd be starting, you know, Sterling or Rashford or Grealish ahead of him. But, you know, I think, you know, especially the fact that he has been in and around that national team, I think, you know, that counts for something. I mean, don't get me wrong, you know, I'm not a fan of picking players just because they've played for the national team. But, you know, when there's not much to split the two players, I think that's definitely got to count for something.
Yeah.
But, you know, even if we don't take Sancho, you know, we've still got players like Maddison who, you know, are top quality.
Yeah. Yeah, but Sancho plays out on the right.
Hmm. Yeah, but, you know, could see potentially, I don't know, maybe Grealish on the left, Foden on the right, and Maddison in the middle with Kane up front. Yeah. Or, you know, you can sneak Rashford and Sterling in there. Like, we've got lots of attacking options, is what I'm saying.
Hmm. I wouldn't take Sancho personally.
Well, you know, you've been watching more Bundesliga than me, so you'd know better than me. Right, and we'll move on swiftly then to Leeds and Everton. Gylfi Sigurdsson, the unlikely scorer for Everton to kick off the game. Calvert-Lewin making it two before half time. I mean, Rafinha getting one back for Leeds, but it wasn't enough. Again, you know, I mean, I don't want to fucking, like, bend over backwards for Leeds. But, you know, it was a good performance from them against an Everton side who are doing well at the moment. And, you know, Sigurdsson actually stepped up for once in this game after, you know, we talk about how players like Sigurdsson, like Iwobi, like Bernard, like Davies aren't stepping up. You know, they aren't being good enough backups. You know, Sigurdsson getting a goal, sort of proving his worth.
Well, yeah, I mean, I disagree with people who say that Sigurdsson's too old or not too good enough for Everton. Because when they've needed him, he stepped up, particularly in the Chelsea game, where they beat us. He played immensely, obviously scoring the penalty. Mm. And then he got the only goal to beat Sheffield United a few weeks ago, and then he gets a goal in this game, the first goal, pretty early on. And Lucas Digne, he's got to be in a shout for left back, best left back this season.
I mean, I've always been a fan of Lucas Digne. I think he's just such a talented left back. Like, I mean, you know, he's I think he's really good. You know, we've really... He's been unlucky with injuries these past couple of years, but, you know, when he's not been injured, we've seen how good creatively he is. And he allows Richarlison to have that sort of freedom on that left-hand side. You know, he doesn't track back as much because Digne is so good. But yeah, I think he's a great player, Digne.
Mm-hmm. Another player I rate up there is that I didn't really see much of at Norwich was Ben Godfrey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to bring him up as well. I think he's really been good. And I've heard Godfrey's name being mentioned in terms of the England conversation as well. I think, you know, for a player who's been asked to play, you know, left-back, centre-back and right-back this season, I think he's really stepped up. I think the fact where he was at Norwich... I think it was more really the fact that the whole, you know, defence as a whole and, you know, the fact that they were all so young, they didn't really combine well. You know, you had Max Aarons, who was 20, you had Jamal Lewis, who was 20, you had Godfrey, who was 20. You know, they were all inexperienced. I think that was why, you know, you could easily see him get caught out and Norwich defence wasn't great. last season. But with that being said, I feel like when you've put him into this Everton team, you put him alongside Michael Keane, who is an experienced Premier League centre-back. You put him alongside Seamus Coleman, who's been, you know, consistently and ever-present in Everton's side for over 10 years. You know, you put him next to Luca Digne, who is a class left-back, who, you know, could probably be playing, you know, Champions League football.
Yeah.
I feel like if you put him in the midst of that sort of defence, you know, his quality will shine through over his inexperience.
Mm-hmm. How well has Todd Cantwell done in the Championship?
To be quite honest with you, I haven't really heard his name being mentioned. Or at least over Emi Buendia's name, at the very least. I know Norwich are flying high, don't get me wrong. But, you know, I wouldn't say that he stood out, Cantwell. He's been fine, but, you know. I mean, to be honest with you, the stats probably make him look worse than he's been. I mean, he's only got 2 goals and 2 assists this season. I think it's just that Buendia has been the main creative force in that Norwich side that Cantwell's not really shown. But he's not been bad by any means.
Hmm. So, do you think if they get promoted, he won't leave?
Cantwell, I don't think will. No. I think Buendia. It looks like Norwich are going to get promoted. I think Buendia. I think he probably will stick around. I mean, he stuck with him in the Championship, so he clearly, you know, wanted to see him stay with him and get promoted. So I think he will stick around. I mean, I know there's been, you know, big clubs sniffing around him, and Arsenal. But, you know, I think both Buendia and Cantwell, and probably even, you know, people like Max Aarons, I think they'll stick around as well. I think, you know, Norwich are really going to benefit from keeping that consistency, because they almost got promoted too soon. You know, they got promoted when a lot of their squad were still, you know, in the late teens, early 20s. So I think, you know, that consistency, you know, they kept a lot of their main players. They kept Daniel Farker. I think that consistency will really serve them well. And to be honest with you, if I'm going to go out on a limb, next season I think they'll be absolutely fine. I don't think they'll be in any danger whatsoever, Norwich.
Really? I know they don't have the financial backing to compete.
But I think, you know, with the squad that they're putting together, I think they'll be fine, Norwich. I really do. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that. I think the fact that they've kept everything more or less the same, like, I think it was just a fact that, you know, they went up too soon. Because I know when Farker took over, that they had a 5-year plan in place to get him back into the Premier League, and he got them up in 2. So.
Mm. And then they'll be back up again, which is probably another thing not on their plan.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, what game were we talking about?
The Everton Leeds match.
Everton Leeds, yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's not really too much to say, really, that hasn't already been said. I mean, have you got what else you want to add on?
Not really.
No. Right, well, I mean, we're going to move on to Aston Villa and West Ham, and the main talking point from this game, really, was the re-emergence of Jay Lings, you know, coming on, you know. Oh, no, he didn't come on. Never mind. I'm thick. But, you know, he really had a class game. You know, obviously, bagging a brace. And, yeah, he looked like a completely new player. He looked totally revitalised. Yeah, what did you make of Lingard's performance?
Complete night and day from the man we saw at Man United last season that got 0 goals, 0 assists. Yeah, I mean, Well, he obviously wasn't eligible for the game against Man United, where I think he was definitely needed because that game had absolutely no life. So you can definitely see, you know, even despite having one game, how much his impact is being felt upon the team. He just breathes life into the team.
Yeah, you know, he's really, you know, he's totally revitalised. I think that West Ham, you know, ever since Fornals was sort of not proven to be the player that they thought they were going to get. They've got a lot of talent in wide areas. You know, you're looking at Jared Bowen, you're looking at Ben Rama, you know, you're looking at...
Ben Rama was good last night.
Yeah, Ben Rama. You know, you're looking at Antonio can play out wide. You know, Fredericks has played on the wing occasionally. Lanzini's played out on there. You know, they've got talent out there. But that number 10 position they were lacking. I mean, you saw against Man United, they were playing Mark Noble in that 10 position. He just doesn't have the legs for that. So I think bringing in Lingard, even if it's just on loan, it was definitely a position where they were lacking West Ham. And, you know, beating Aston Villa, because this was a big game, you know, this was a big game in terms of, you know, potentially pushing for Europe. I mean, you know, I don't want to say, you know, that's it, but I think, you know, this could be the game that, you know, Villa look back on and think that was the turning point in our season where, you know, we stopped thinking about potential Europe.
Yeah. It's quite crazy how they've shifted their goals in, you know, a matter of months, essentially. Mm.
Well, they've brought in a lot of really good attacking talent of West Ham.
I'm on about Villa here.
Oh, Villa, yeah. Well, both teams, really.
Yeah.
Oh, you mean goals as in, like, expectations?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you meant goals, as in, like, goal scoring.
Yeah, that's my bad. Yeah, I mean, like, yeah, because, like, last season, they were, their thoughts were, can we stay up? Now it's...
Oh, both teams were.
Yeah, I mean, more so Villa. And then Villa go and shock us all with that 7-2 victory over Liverpool. And then you start thinking that, even at that point, you were thinking, yeah, that's, you know, Europe's a possibility. You beat the champions 7-2.
I really like how, you know, Smith has built this Villa team. I mean, don't get me wrong, you know, it's not from a lack of spending, don't get me wrong. But they really have built a very good team. Well, both teams have built a very good team. Full of English talent as well, which I think is commendable. I think, you know, I think this could probably be the start of... Well, I don't want to say Villa's out of it yet, but I think, you know... I don't think they'll qualify for Europe now. I think this was a game what they had to win if they were, you know, thinking about Europe.
No, I mean, the way that this season's been, I wouldn't count anyone out.
Oh, yeah, no, don't get me wrong. You've still got a long way to go. I just think Villa need to grind out more results. I don't think they're good at doing that. I think, you know... I mean, they've only got two draws all season. You know, just turn a couple of those eight losses into draws, like, and you shoot up the table.
Mm-hmm.
I just think they lack the ability to grind out a result.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you saw, you know, against Burnley, they took the lead twice and they ended up losing. Like,
yeah. I mean, the two draws is worrying, where they don't really learn. They need to learn to settle for a draw at some point and not go all out for a win.
Mm.
That is what's costing them points. You're trying to turn 1 point into three and then ending up with zero.
Yeah, exactly. And it's, you know, grinding out those results. You know, even if you don't deserve them, it's grinding out those results that will get you the wins. The wins. But grinding out them results, what will shoot you up the table and get you, you know, it'll be the difference between Europe and not grinding out them results. So, you know. I mean, don't get me wrong, there's still a long way to go. You know, but I still think both teams are definitely looking much improved on last season as well. But, I mean, you know, we want to talk about, you know, shocking results. Liverpool got a shock result a couple of weeks ago, losing 1-0 at Anfield to Burnley. And now they've lost 1-0 at Anfield to Brighton. It was a very different game to the Burnley game. I think the Burnley game, we definitely didn't deserve to win. You know, we should have lost that game. Liverpool absolutely dominated us, but we just completely nullified their attack and caught them on the break once. Yeah,
I don't think they did deserve the win.
Well,
I don't think either side deserved to win. I don't think you deserved to lose.
Well, yeah, but this is what I'm saying, the difference is we definitely didn't deserve to beat Liverpool at Anfield. Brighton definitely did. They outplayed Liverpool here.
I'm just going to let you talk because I'm having my brain fart over here.
I mean, you know, I think, like, I don't know what's up with him. Like, playing Henderson at centre-back just doesn't work. I don't know, like, I don't know why they don't see that. Like, it's just baffling to me. Like, it's like playing Steven Gerrard at centre-back. It just doesn't work. Like, it's all right playing for, and I'm not comparing, you know, the quality of Steven Gerrard to the quality of Jordan Henderson, by the way. I'm just saying they're similar types of players. You know, it's all right playing Fabinho at centre-back because you're basically asking him to do the same role that he would do in midfield, just a little bit further back in the pitch. That's fine. He can do that. But, you know, you've got Jordan Henderson, who's sort of like a, you know, box-to-box shuttler type of midfielder. Like, asking him to play centre-back, it's never going to work out, especially next to someone like Nathaniel Phillips. Like, it's just not going to work. And even when, you know, on deadline day, they signed Kabak, they signed Davies, and they still played Henderson at centre-back.
Yeah, I don't understand why they would make those signings and then backtrack a little bit and go, maybe they're not ready.
They didn't even include Ben Davies in the squad. You know, what the fuck message does that send to Ben Davies? You know, they're starting two midfielders in the centre-back roles, and I'm not even in the squad. What the fuck did I sign for then? Like, what sort of message does that send to him?
Yeah.
And let's be honest, if Kabak was English and Davies was Turkish, you know, if Davies was from the foreign league and Kabak was from the championship, you know, I'm pretty sure Davies would have been the one in the squad and Kabak would have been the one left out, I'm just saying. But, you know, saying all this, you know, I mean, yeah, I do think Klopp got it wrong tactically, but, you know, that's not to take anything away from Brighton. Brighton, you know, we've seen them outplay teams, you know, consistently this season. And I think this was another example of that. I think the midfield three of Gross, Bissouma and Alzate, you know, and you saw Ben White sort of roaming into midfield at points. I think they were excellent at shutting down that Liverpool midfield. I think Bissouma is such a quality player. He's class, is Bissouma. I think you could put Bissouma at any club in the league. I genuinely do think that. I think he's class.
Yeah.
he gets into that Liverpool team.
Oh, well, yeah, they were looking at signing him, yeah. Maybe it's... The thing is, Brighton haven't done anything different in that game than they had all season. And that's why I feel like they are unlucky. Because that the game against Liverpool was no different. Just they happened to actually score, you know, went from their attack.
Mm.
Should have had more. And that game against Spurs the other week, that's another indication of that.
Mm.
You know, the Connolly miss was why they're not getting that those results. And they did deserve more than one goal.
Mm. Yeah, I don't think it's a sake of luck, per se. I just think it's the fact that their strikers aren't as clinical as, you know, you need to be when you're in a relegation scrap. But, you know, they are definitely creating the chances. Like, and I mean, we saw that here. Like, they absolutely bossed Liverpool. Like, that Liverpool team did not look like a team that won the league by about 20 points last season. Like, no. They looked awful. They genuinely looked awful.
They did.
I think, did they even have a shot on target? I can't remember him having a shot on target.
Like they did against Burnley, they were trying crosses. And that is teams like Burnley and Brighton's wheelhouse.
Yeah, exactly. Brighton have three massive centre-backs and a massive left-back playing. Yeah, exactly. You know, you've got four massive defenders playing. Like, they're going to get them crosses out every day of the week. Like, I don't get it. And it's not like you've got Harry Kane on the end of them. You know, you're crossing, you know, against 6'6" centre-halves to Bobby Firmino. Like...
I mean, he can't even get goals on the ground.
Exactly. I don't get it. Like, tactically, he's just... Klopp is consistently getting it wrong.
And then he'll constantly find something to blame it on rather than his stubbornness and shitty tactics.
Oh, yeah. I think the mask is definitely starting to slip. I'll say, Jurgen Klopp. You know, he does tend to lash out a lot more now. But, you know, at the end of the day, this Liverpool team, you know, they could be in danger of not finishing in the top four. Never mind, you know, in the title challenge. Like,
well, yeah, teams around them that have got a game or two, you know.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you're looking at Chelsea, who under Tuchel look like a completely different team. You're looking at, you know, Spurs, who now that they've got Harry Kane back, could return to that form that we saw at the start of the season. Looking at Everton, who, once they get a fully fit squad, could be going back to the form they saw at the start of the season with two games in hand on them. You know, you're even looking at teams like West Ham, who, you know, they're up and coming, they're fresh, they look energised. Liverpool don't look energised as a team, they look knackered.
Yeah. I think that does feed into the lack of squad depth. And I don't understand why the funding isn't there by their owners, considering the successes of last season.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, you know, I mean, don't get me wrong. You know, it's not like they've spent nothing. Like, like they've spent, you know, what was it, 40 million on Jota, 20 million on Thiago. They brought in Tsimikas for about 15 million. But it's not like they've bought no one. You know, I think they're smart signings, but like they definitely should have had the money to go out and buy a top class centre half. You know, when you've got Van Dijk out for the season, Gomez out for the season, Matip out for, you know, the foreseeable future. You know, when you're having to play a youth team centre back who is clearly not ready for Premier League football, and Jordan Henderson as your centre-backs, you should be looking at top-class centre-backs who can be available for the season. And don't get me wrong, I like Ben Davies. I think he's a good quality centre-half for a bottom half Premier League team. I've not seen much of Kabak, but you know, from what I've heard, he definitely has a lot of potential to turn into a quality centre back. But they're not going to get you a league.
I think they do know behind closed doors that that's not realistic.
Yeah, I mean, we saw the difference that signing a top-class centre-half made. Top-class centre-half made when they signed Van Dijk. The difference that Van Dijk made to that Liverpool team. Like, you know, like, so I don't understand why. Because they know that signing a top-class player makes that difference. So I don't understand why they're not doing it.
Me neither. I mean, yeah. I mean, Liverpool should have a better academy as well for the kind of the size of the club they are, and then they having to rely on players like Reece Williams, who probably wouldn't even get into a League Two team.
I mean, don't get me wrong. They've got a couple of, you know, talents coming through. You know, you're looking at Curtis Jones, for example. I think he could turn into a really good player. Obviously, you had Trent already come through. Rhian Brewster, whilst, you know, you might not rate him, they managed to get £25 million for him. So, yeah.
I think that's because he played for Liverpool. I think that's... Like, we got, I think it was £18 million for Dominic Solanke from Liverpool. And then they got that back from sending him to Bournemouth.
Yeah, I mean, I still don't know how you did that. I mean, but, you know, the teams won't spend £25 million on bums, though. Like, he clearly has something about him. So, I mean, but, you know, like, it's not like they have three or four players coming through. Right? And that's where you look at Chelsea, who have, you know, academy players, you know, coming out their ears, getting into the team. That's where you look at, you know, Arsenal having academy players constantly getting into the team, breaking through, you know. And that's, you know, that's not happening at Liverpool.
Is there any players that they've got loaned out at the moment?
Well, Harvey Elliott's on loan to Blackburn. Apparently he's doing okay. Like,
I think Liverpool went to court today about Harvey Elliott.
Really? What about? I hadn't heard this.
Because he was under 23 and they're meant to pay compensation. They're claiming that they paid $750,000 for him. Fulham won $8 million.
Won $8 million? Fucking hell. Well, yeah. I mean, you know, going to court over Harvey Elliott, like, yeah.
Well, we signed Billy Gilmore at 16 for $1.5 million. From Rangers.
So, I'm. Yeah, but that's not £8 million, though, is it? Like,
no, but
yeah.
No, but...
Like, I think in our history as a club, Burnley, we've only signed about 5 or 6 players for more than £8 million, like...
Yeah. But he's a very good player. And then again, so Billy Gilmore, but he was 16, so the talent wasn't quite seen at that point.
Yeah.
Wait, have you never signed players under 18 from abroad? From England? Like Arsenal? And...
I'm trying to think. I mean, I know in recent memory, I can't remember. I know we got Ben Mee and Kieran Trippier for free from Man City's academy about 10 years ago.
Ah, you weren't going to pay compensation.
Yeah. So, you know, they were worth it. But I don't think we've spent money on, you know, teenagers. Yeah, we only buy 30-year-olds from Stoke. But yeah, I mean, going back to this Brighton-Liverpool games are out, really, that you're wanting to add on to it, or we move on to a London derby?
Move on.
Yeah, let's go. Chelsea 1, Spurs 0. I'll let you start off with this, since you're the Chelsea fan. What were your thoughts on this game?
A comfortable win, but yeah, we desperately need to start finishing our chances. That was definitely the case under Lampard, but the difference was we were conceding chances, and you know, usually the opposition was capitalised on that. You know, under Tuchel, that has been swept under the carpet very quickly.
I think, you know, obviously it's clear that Tuchel's patient, you know, possession-orientated football is the way that you're going to be playing going forward. You know, and I think that, you know, a lot of that is reliant on the two fullbacks. I think, you know, whether it's Hudson-Odoi or James on the right, whether it's Alonso or Chilwell on the left, I think you've got four quality wing-backs there. And that's what I've been saying about Alonso as well. You know, I mean, not to, you know, rub my dick on your face or anything, but, like, I'm saying to you that in a back five, Alonso works, you know, whilst you were dismissing him as shit. So I'm just going to, you know, take a quick victory lap there.
I knew that was the case under Conte. Him, he was on the left side, Moses was on the right side. That was a, you know, brilliant wing-back pairing. But he doesn't work as a left-back because he can't defend. Best half right. Is going forward.
Go on.
I was just saying, his best assets going forward, and we've seen that.
Oh, yeah.
And
I think
that Werner's confidence is coming back, because I believe he was man of the match that day.
I think between this and the Sheffield United game, he's definitely growing into his role. I think the fact that Tuchel speaks German and he's German will probably help him out. But I mean, you could definitely tell, especially, you know, I mean, you know, I'm watching the Burnley game a lot closer than I did, you know, neutral games. But you could just tell his confidence was absolutely shot. Like, he wasn't wanting to shoot. And when he was, like, completely whiffy. Like, so, yeah, like, I do think his confidence will come back. And I'm wondering if we'll see the same sort of thing with Havertz. Obviously, I think because he only made one appearance under Tuchel so far. So, I mean, it'll be interesting to see whether Havertz does rediscover his Bayer Leverkusen form. What's that?
So, I'd imagine he'll be playing Thursday. Best game to sort of insert him in.
Yeah. I think the problem is that, you know, like Lampard, Tuchel doesn't really play with a number 10, which is his natural position, so he'll probably, you know, Havertz will be, you know, either forced out on the right wing or the left wing. So, and that's not really where he's effective from. Because especially if we're seeing this Jorginho-Kovacic double pivot, I think that's definitely looking like Tuchel starting central midfielders at the very least.
Maybe he might mix it up on Thursday. You know, that's a good game to sort of experiment with the number 10 if you want to use it. See how it starts against Championship opposition.
Because I mean, Barnsley are, you know, they're doing relatively okay in Championship. So it will be a chance for Tuchel to, you know, check out some of his lesser used players at the time at the club. You know, players like Havertz, players like Pulisic. You know, you'd think Ziyech would probably get a look in there. You know, so yeah, it's a good chance. And I mean, as for Spurs,
What do you think he'll play? Like a 3-4-1-2?
I've no idea. Yeah, we'll have to wait and see. You'll know better than me. But I mean, you know, just going on to Spurs for a little bit. I mean, you know, we saw obviously this performance, but the difference between this performance and the performance against West Brom, granted, they are two very different opponents, you know, in terms of quality. But I think, you know, the difference that Harry Kane makes, like, the performances were night and day. Like, it's clear to see that, you know, the team, you know, it's built around, it relies upon, and it is shipped without Harry Kane.
Yeah. I mean, Son is nowhere near the same player. I guess, like, the assists aren't coming off because there's no one really to feed into. Yeah, I mean, that's good for us because, you know, they're sort of sniffing around that top four. Obviously, it's that we played them.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, obviously, they did turn it around against West Brom, but that made three losses in a row in the league for Jose Mourinho. And yet, like, it just shows the difference that Harry Kane makes. Like, you know, talking earlier in the show about Jamie Vardy, but, you know, it's clear, you know, to see, to anyone with eyes. I mean, I think even Stevie Wonder could see how important Harry Kane is to this Spurs team. And, yeah, they need a replacement. Simple as. I don't think Vinicius is capable of being that replacement.
Well, he's a completely different player. He likes to get in behind, whereas Harry Kane will hold up, play, he's an aerial threat.
Yeah, he's a traditional number nine who leads the line.
Yeah. Whereas Vinicius is... We are starting to see that sort of change of striker where the faster players are getting in behind and scoring because defenders now have to be fast. Get away with being John Terry nowadays.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think we are sort of seeing a sort of mini renaissance in strikers, you know, nines who lead the line. You know, we've got, obviously, you've got Harry Kane. But, you know, we're looking at, if you look at other clubs, you know, you're looking at players like Calvert-Lewin, for example, players like Danny Ings, players like, you know, even Tammy Abraham is another example of, you know, strikers who aren't necessarily quick, but, you know, they're predatory, I think is the term. I think, you know, we're seeing less. I think strikers are still quick, but I think we're seeing less strikers getting in behind, but, you know, quick bursts of pace, you know, when needed.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think we've even seen that change with Jamie Vardy, where he's not running in behind anymore. He's, you know, your Gary Lineker type, your fox in the box.
Yeah.
He can make quick bursts of pace, but he's not doing that for 90 minutes.
Well, who do you think would be an ideal player to look at for Spurs then?
Well, I mean, you know, I don't think he would leave Everton to be a backup, but I think Dominic Calvert-Lewin is the perfect Harry Kane substitute for me. I think they're very similar players. And I think Calvert-Lewin definitely has the quality to replace Kane. And, you know, tactically, they are two very similar players.
Well, I wasn't talking about necessarily replacing them because how old is Kane? Like 28, 29?
I think he's 28. I mean, if Harry Kane goes his entire career without winning a major trophy, like, that is the biggest football disgrace since George Best not going to the World Cup. Like, that is an absolute travesty if Kane never wins a trophy.
Well, Shearer didn't win many, did he?
Well, he won the Premier League.
He did, yeah. One season.
Yeah, but it's still more than Kane, isn't it?
Yeah.
Kane deserves to win a major trophy in his career, honestly. I think he'll be a player like Wayne Rooney, who he'll be a lot more appreciated once he retires, how good he really is.
Okay.
I really do rate Harry Kane. I think he's class.
What you genuinely think there's people out there who don't know how good Harry Kane is?
Well, no, I'm not saying that, but I think that he'll be a lot more appreciated once he retires. I think.
Okay.
I mean, apart from that, there's not really too many talking points from this game, to be quite honest with you. The penalty was definitely a penalty. Eric Dier was being completely stupid.
Mm-hmm.
I swear to God, if Eric Dier starts at the Euros, honestly.
He's made the most blocks this season.
Yeah, but he's a fucking brain-dead centre-back, honestly. He's so brainless. He has no footballing IQ. He's no footballing IQ, and he's just a shite defender. The only reason that Jose Mourinho's kept him around is because he speaks Portuguese. Yeah, that's the only reason. Because he's shite.
Quite a bold statement.
Well, I just don't rate him at all. Do you rate Eric Dier?
No.
Yeah.
No, I think that he does have qualities that make him a good centre back, i.e. the blocking. You know, there's not a lot of players don't put their bodies on the line nowadays.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't know. I thought we'd moved on from Eric Dier. Honestly, I did. Like, I just don't rate him as a centre back. Like, honestly, I don't. To be honest with you, I rate him more as a midfielder than a centre half.
Really, he has no qualities as a midfielder.
Well, I don't think he has many qualities anyway. But you know, apart from that, it's not really too much. So I mean, we'll move on to Villa and Arsenal. Not really too much, so I mean, we'll keep this brief. Martinez was excellent in this game. Watkins getting an early goal, you know, 2 minutes in, like, you know, it was just sloppy from Arsenal. They were on the back foot all game. And, you know, we're talking about Villa not being able to grind out results. You know, they did so here. I think they probably did deserve to win overall. But, you know, yeah, it's just sloppy from Arsenal.
I mean, how long are they going to stick with Arteta for? Because these sort of results, they'd be lucky to finish top six.
Yeah, I don't think that they'll get European football, to be quite honest with you. I think he'll see the season out, Arteta, definitely. But I think next season, if things don't improve, I definitely think he'll be gone then. I think we are seeing clubs, you know, trying to be more patient with managers, especially ex-players. Because, you know, we're seeing with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer that patience does pay off. I mean, not that, you know, Ole's turned into a top-class manager all of a sudden, or that United are, you know, going to win the league now. But I still think that, you know, the Man U board have proven to be right in giving Ole time, because he's turned it round. He's proven that he's capable of managing United to a decent quality. And I think that's why, you know, you saw the Chelsea board stick with Lampard longer than they would do any other manager. It's why you saw them stick. It's why you see an Arsenal board sticking with Arteta for, you know, quite a decent while. I think ex-players do definitely get a lot longer of a shelf life as a manager than normal managers would do. But I can't see Arteta finishing next season as Arsenal manager, to be quite honest with you.
No, absolutely not. Yeah, they just seem at times. I mean, there's a heavy reliance on Aubameyang. Then they loaned out Joe Willock, which I didn't think was a good move because I rate him, and Newcastle are going to see the benefit of him.
Well, I mean, Aubameyang's been shite this season. I think the fact that they're relying on a 17-year-old for their attacking impetus, for their creativity, for their spark, they're relying on a 17-year-old Saka. Like, that's shocking, that, for Arsenal. Like, and the thing is, like, they just haven't strengthened. They should have really gone more hard in the summer transfer window because they were attractive then. You know, they'd won the FA Cup. They were on the up. They got into European football. Like, who the fuck's going to want to sign for Arsenal now? Like, do you think Alar is going to want to sign for Arsenal now?
I can't see who's gonna change, like, the narrative for Arsenal, because, like you said, there's who wants to go to Arsenal.
I think it's a problem that starts from the top down, really, with Arsenal in terms of, you know, the board. But I mean, you know, like. Like you say, I just don't know who, you know, who's available that would go to Arsenal, you know. Like, you know, just off the top of my head, managers who are unemployed. You know, you've got Rafa, you've got Valverde, Allegri, Frank Lampard.
He'll be loved there.
Yeah. You do have what's his face?
Oh yeah, great manager.
So piss off. He managed America and then he managed Hertha Berlin for a bit.
You're not
German.
Jürgen Klinsmann.
Yeah. I think he's alright.
Spurs player, yeah, that'd be lovely.
Oh yeah, true, fair point. I mean, you got Vieira and Henri, if you want to go ex-players.
Vieira, who got sacked by Nice because he almost got relegated, yeah.
Well, you know, I'm saying if you want to go ex-players, you know. And then, you know, thinking of other managers, you know, you've got fucking Eddie Howe, like, you know.
His stock has plummeted. He shouldn't have stayed the next season.
Well, you know, I never rated how to begin with. But, you know, that's a different tale. But, you know, the point is, you know, well, A, who's going to want to go to Arsenal? And B, what one manager is going to be able to turn around that sack of shit?
Awesome, Mingo.
Ah, yeah, good one, Arsene Wenger. I mean, thing is, Wenger would be doing better with this Arsenal team. I truly believe that. Last season, Wenger would have got that team at top four. Do you agree or disagree with that?
That used to be the thing that got Wenger in the trouble. Now, that's the end goal.
Yeah, they'd snap your hand off for Champions League football, Arsenal. You know, like, I mean, I can't see him getting European football. I mean, we saw him against Villa, who are a team competing for, you know, European football, and they did nothing. Like, you know, when Saka isn't firing, Arsenal aren't firing. Simple as.
Mm. Well, the best chance they've got is winning the Europa League, which I really don't see.
No. I cannot see them winning the Europa League at all. I mean, can you see you even getting past Benfica? Like,
nah.
Yeah. I mean, when you've got teams in the Europa League, you know, teams like Man United, like Roma, like AC Milan, Leicester, Spurs even, you know, Bayer Leverkusen, Napoli, Ajax, Lille, even Rangers. I think they'll all do a better job than Arsenal in the Europa League.
I think of those clubs you mentioned, I think Lille will have the best chance. I can't even remember who Leicester have got in the next round.
Leicester have got Slavia Praga away.
Oh, yeah.
Away in the first leg, at the very least.
Oh, yeah. Some the English clubs aren't being allowed into some countries, are they? So they've got to play both games in a neutral venue.
Oh, yeah, true, but I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, you know, UEFA is still planning on hosting Euro 2021 in about 10 different countries. So, you know, who knows what's going to happen.
Well, I know that United, Liverpool and Man City, their games have been moved to Hungary.
All right.
There was something out today, I can't remember where Chelsea's got to go, but I think it might be Turin.
Mm.
And then what happens then? Because, like, don't you have to isolate after you've been to a new country?
Well, yeah, I assume so.
Oh, but they get tested, don't they?
So. Yeah, true.
Basically, I don't see Arsenal doing anything this season.
No, I can't. I think next season we see Arsenal without European football for, you know, what would be the first time in probably over 20 years.
Yeah, that's the way of Arsenal at the moment, and I think that's been indicative of the way they're being run. I mean, their owner is very tight with them, but very, I don't know what the term is, but he splashes out on his American franchises. We've mentioned this before, but Arsenal is his personal ATM. And unfortunately, you can't run owners out in the Premier League, especially when they've got that kind of money.
Mm.
It's not like Benkies or whatever.
Yeah.
Should we get into the Burnley Brighton game?
Yeah, we can do. I mean, this was weird for me, right? Because very, very rarely do Burnley ever dominate a game and we didn't win it. Like, it was so weird because I felt robbed out of that game, coming out of it, after a draw. We were by far the better team. I think the first half, we started slow. it was a very weak goal to concede from a corner. But the second half, we just turned it around. And I think we definitely deserve to score. And I think this shows why Vidra should be in the team. I think he created loads of attacks basically out of nothing. And yeah, it wasn't a must win game, this. It was a must not lose game. A point was a decent result, but, we dominated the game, and I'm disappointed we didn't get three, which is weird for me to say as a Burnley fan.
But didn't that, you had a goal disallowed for offside, wasn't it, Ashley Barnes?
Yeah, but it there was no argument. It was miles offside. But...
Oh. So when they took the lead, you're usually proficient in the air, yet Lewis Dunk gets the ball.
Yeah, I mean, that was, it was definitely poor from us. I think that, no one was marking him, and I think Goodmanson on the back post, it came to him and he was on the line and he couldn't keep out. It was a weird goal to concede. It's definitely not one that I'd expect us to concede. It was definitely poor.
And then Aaron Connolly almost doubled their lead from the edge of the box.
Yeah. They had a couple of chances, Brighton, but I think, early in the second half, probably for the first, 5 minutes, they were probably the better team. But I think after that, once we got his arses in gear, we really should have won that game. But...
Wasn't McAllister man of the match?
I think it was Sanchez. Oh. I know he made six saves, Sanchez. So.
Okay.
Sanchez is a very good goalkeeper, I've spoken for quite a bit about how I don't rate Matt Ryan, and Sanchez is definitely a huge upgrade on Ryan, I do have to say.
Oh yeah, he didn't go against Villa, wasn't he?
Yeah, Matt Ryan, he was, yeah.
He didn't seem out of sorts, though. I think if he was in a Brighton shirt, I think it would have been a bit different story. I don't know what that is.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't believe that Sanchez was on loan at Rochdale last season.
No. He definitely looks like a, at the very least, a Premier League quality goalkeeper.
And then Goodmanson get the goal for you. I mean, you like him, but he doesn't tend to play often.
He's really been unlucky with injuries as Goodmanson. Between last season and the season before, I think he only played 90 minutes about three or four times. He's basically consistently injured, which is a real shame because on his day, he is a top quality player, is Goodmanson. We do need a winger because we've only got three wingers in the squad and two of them are consistently injury prone. Do definitely need another winger.
Also the Barnes goal afterwards that was offside. Wasn't there a chance by Vidra? Header?
Oh, yeah. There was a couple of chances from Vidra. Really he should have put away. We all know that finishing isn't Vidra's strong suit. He just tend to fluff a couple of chances. But I think he makes up with that for the chances that he creates, really. I mean, I can understand why Dyche is hesitant to play Vidra because, you know, he is a poor finisher. But I do definitely think he should be in the team.
Rooney?
Oh, yeah, 100%. I think...
He had one goal this season in 17 appearances.
Well, yeah, but most of those appearances are 5 minutes off the bench. Right? He very rarely starts.
Okay. He played 90 against Brighton, played 90 against City, 73 against Bournemouth, 90 against Fulham. He played 44 minutes against MK Dons and he scored. And then the rest, like you said, have been off the bench.
Well, I mean, he got an assist against Fulham, I think. And, you know, and City, well, we didn't create anything. I mean, Ronaldo wouldn't have scored if he played 90 minutes for us against City. I mean, you know, I definitely think he should be starting. I think him and Chris Wood, even though Wood has been out of form this season, he is still a good player. He's just not shown it this season.
Why not Ashley Barnes?
Well, I mean, he doesn't, like...
Hasn't he been your main striker for years?
Well, not really main striker.
Well, you know, the best one.
Yeah, well, I mean, when he came in, it was Ings and Vokes. And then once Danny Ings left, it was Vokes and Gray. And then... and then once Gray left, it was Wood and Barnes. So there was probably like a season or two from like 2017 to 2019 where he was his best striker. But ever since that year-long injury, he's not been the same player. I mean, he definitely has a role in the squad. You know, he's very good at winning free kicks in optimal positions and just being a general shithouse. So, you know, he definitely has his place in the squad as, like, a plan B forward. You know, bring him on 20 minutes to go if you need a goal. But I don't think we should be starting with him. I think he definitely limits what we can do going forward, I think.
Quick question. When was the last time you scored from a direct free kick?
From a direct free kick? No idea.
Okay.
I mean, his two best free kick takers are constantly injured with Brady and Goodmanson. Like, I mean, it was probably the Dufour free kick against Man United, to be honest with you. Like,
Jesus.
Which was ages ago, but it was a quality free kick. I mean, that was David Beckham-esque, that free kick. But, yeah, I mean, most of his free kick goals come from, you know, crosses from deep out wide rather than directly.
That's why I asked the rep.
Yeah. And this is, as well, you know, this is the first season that Ashley Westwood, so far at the very least, this stat could change come the end of the season. But this is the first season since 2017-18 that Ashley Westwood hasn't scored directly from a free kick, from a corner, sorry. He's a very good corner taker, is that man?
Oh, okay.
Yeah. 2018-19, he scored directly from a free kick away against Liverpool. And last season, it was against Southampton? Yeah, it was Southampton. He scored directly from a corner. So.
Wait, you just said a free kick and then you said a corner?
Well, I meant corner.
I remember Junior Stanislas scored a goal against United from the corner.
Yeah. I wouldn't mind Junior Stanislas coming back to Burnley, to be honest with you.
Wait, wasn't the Westwood goal against Saints?
Yeah, directly from the corner.
Yeah, I do recall that.
Yeah. And he scored one against Liverpool the season before as well.
I somewhat... Was Karius in goal?
No, it was Alisson.
Oh, Christ, that's even worse. Have we got anything else to add on the game?
Not really, to be honest. We are. I just think, you know, it was a good performance from us. And, you know, with us going into three big games, you know, Palace, West Brom and Fulham, you know, I want to see us continue that performance. But, yeah, we go to, we'll go to Newcastle and Southampton. And I think, you know, the main talking point really is, you know, how the change in formation has really affected Newcastle. They've looked far better ever since, you know, Graham Jones has introduced his, you know, 4-4-2 diamond style formation here.
Yes, but with that being said, they have got a major defensive crisis, essentially. So before the game, they had no Kieran Clark, no Federico Fernandez, and no Lascelles. And then Matt Mankia had to come off. That looked pretty bad. And I think Paul Dummett also got hurt, and he had to come off.
It was Fabian Scher, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because I know they ended the game with nine men, because Bruce had already made his three subs.
And yet Saints still lost.
Yeah.
We spoke about him earlier, but Joe Willock, his goal, very good.
Yeah. I mean, you know, for me, I never saw Willock as someone who, you know, I never personally rated him higher than, like, you know, Maitland-Niles or a Smith-Rowe. But, you know, really? If he can carry on the form that he started in this Newcastle game, you know, he could easily prove me wrong.
Well, I do not rate Maitland-Niles at all. Smith-Rowe has definitely shown why he should start in the games that he plays. He's very dynamic. And then Joe Willock, in my opinion, is the best of the lot. I mean, pretty much showed that on his debut here. And that's partly thanks to a returnee who started for the first time in Alan Maximan to assist.
Yeah, he definitely changes that Newcastle team whenever he plays. He's by far the most dynamic, the most creative, and probably the best player they have going forward is St Maximan. I think for £20 million, he was an absolute bargain signing. For Newcastle, and yeah, they're just looking a completely different team when he plays.
Yeah, so the first half an hour, they were all over him. Almiron gets a goal thanks to Maximan again with the second assist. And then, I don't know, this goal came from absolutely nothing. Minamino, on his debut, cuts inside with a beautiful curler. That Saints didn't really need a winger. They called up. They actually wanted Nico Williams. And Liverpool said, oh, no, but we've got Minamino ready. And they would snap their hand off at that. And you can see why, because what a goal.
Yeah, he's definitely a quality winger, obviously. I mean, he showed it at Salzburg and Liverpool in bursts, but he never really had a, you know, consistent chance in that first team. But I mean, he clearly has something about him, obviously, otherwise Liverpool wouldn't have bought him. But yeah, he's not really had the best time at Liverpool, and I think he really could suit Ralf Hasenhüttl's 4-2-2-2, which is similar to what he played, you know, when he was at managing. Was it Salzburg he was a manager of? Hasenhüttl, or was it Leipzig?
Salzburg, I believe.
Salzburg, yeah.
I'll double check.
It was either Salzburg or Leipzig. But either way, you know, Minamino really does suit that, you know, high-intensity pressing game that is a staple of all Red Bull sides, that Hasenhüttl is trying, at the very least, to continue at Southampton.
It was Leipzig.
It was Leipzig, right.
I thought it was. It might have been Salzburg because he's
Austrian. He's Austrian, yeah.
But it hasn't helped that him when he was him being at Liverpool and playing on the left wing prominently. That, you know, Mane and Jota are there.
Yeah.
Choice, and then they kind of preferring Curtis Jones there as well. Then matters do get worse for Saints. I mean, despite that goal out of nothing, Amron gets a brace just before half time. But I think they go into the half. I think Saints kind of got their heads held high a little bit by going in 3-1 because there is that defensive issue going on at the back. They're kind of scrambling for players at the back. And James Ward-Prowse immediately into the second half with a beautiful free kick.
Yeah, definitely up there with one of the best free kick takers in the Premier League is Ward-Prowse. Definitely deadly from every dead ball.
Yes. Oh yeah. Once you're basically giving a penalty away to him. And 2 minutes after that, things start to sway. Jeff Hendrick gets his second booking, which is very unlike him.
It was stupid. Well, it was unlike him to get sent off, but it was like him to be absolutely completely fucking stupid in the game. It was just stupid. I don't know why. There was no need.
No necessity. There was no danger being posed. Yeah, and they find themselves down to 10 men.
Well, it's the exact same as the Fraser sending off against Sheffield United. There was no need for that either.
No. It's been given to... I just realised, didn't Bednarek own goal it?
I think it was originally given as a Bednarek own goal, but it was overturned.
Oh, okay. I just thought of that, because that week couldn't have got worse for him. A red card and 2 on goals.
Exactly, yeah.
I mean, things are swaying in Saints' favour. Alan Saint-Maximin gets subbed off because he's just come back from injury, and they're looking to shore up the back line with Paul Dummett, and then things get even worse for Newcastle. They have to go down 9 men because Fabian Scheer is in a... Well, is he okay now?
I've no idea. But, you know, if he's out, that could be real trouble for Newcastle.
Oh, wow. I've just searched up. He could be facing up to several months out.
Yeah, so that is a big blow for Newcastle. You know, if you've got, you know, Fabian Scheer out for the season, you know, you've got, you know, Federico Fernandez, Lascelles, you know, they're still looking like a few weeks away, you know.
Clark as well.
Clark being out. Manquillo, I know he's a right back, but he's still defence.
Yeah.
You know, they could really be in trouble, and especially with Chelsea being the next game, Newcastle, you know, they could seriously be looking in, you know, trouble for the next couple of games defensive-wise. You know, Chelsea and Man United is the next two isn't exactly the teams you want to face when you've got no fit centre-backs.
Well, I think the only fit defenders they've got are Paul Dummett, Isaac Hayden, and ML Kraft.
Yeah, exactly.
And 2 are full-backs. They're going to have to either make a makeshift back 3 or call upon some academy lads.
Yeah. I mean, don't they have Jamal Lewis as well? So.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So it'd probably be Dummett and Hayden at centre back with Kraft and Lewis as full backs.
Okay, yeah. Hayden typically sits ahead of the defence, doesn't he? He's been used as a makeshift centre-back.
Yeah, but he has been used as a centre-back these past few games. So I mean, again, it's not like John Henderson where he gets forward a lot. He's been asked to do the same role except a bit further back.
And despite going down to 9 men, Saints, you know, again, it was looking more in their favour for them to get an equaliser and potentially a winner. They only made 1 sub, and that was more indicative of their own injury issues, you know, not wanting to bring someone on and then them getting injured. So they only brought on that Ndlundulu player. And they had Jennepo and... well, that was it, really. Jennepo on the bench as well. They brought on and brought, you know, had a bit more, you know, creativity come forward. And they were just crossing it in all the time. And Newcastle were going to deal with that all day.
Exactly, yeah.
And I think teams need to start learning that that's not the only way you can attack when the players. And I get, I guess they are, you know, parking the bus in essentially, but you need to do what Minamino did and basically drive at them, get past them somehow.
Yeah, teams that play with a low block will defend crosses every day of the week.
Yeah,
you've got to run at them.
Yeah, you got to take a risk, not because your crosses are never going to work.
Exactly.
Because if the first man doesn't get it, then the second man definitely will. Or there's a keeper there who's going to claim it.
Exactly, yeah. And especially with Carl Darlow as well. You know, they've got... they've definitely got a good keeper.
And since they had three strikers on, they had Ings, Adams and Ndlundulu. They were never going to be able to find them with Hayden and especially Darno. So they survive with 9 men and win 3-2. And I think that was well deserved because they got dealt a really rough hand.
Aye.
It was due to stupidity, to be fair.
Yeah, that is just stupid. But yeah, like, again, that could end up being a crucial 3 points from the end of the season. Yeah, these are the games you need to be grinding out results, and Newcastle have done. You know, they're, you know, sat on 25 points from 23 games, 10 points above Fulham, although they do have a game in hand. And I mean, we are sort of almost starting to see Fulham go adrift a bit. I think these next couple of games are definitely crucial for the relegation battle.
Well, I believe it's Burnley Fulham on the 17th.
I think it's in a couple of weeks. It might be the 17th. Yes, it is. It's this time next week.
Yeah, they got Everton at the weekend.
Yeah.
And I believe they play you midweek whilst the Champions League is on, so no one's going to be watching it.
But yeah, I mean, that, you know, if Fulham lose that, that could be them down. But yeah, I mean, you know, it's not really much else I want to say on that. I mean, the next game, there's basically only one talking point. What the fuck was going through Mike Dean's head?
I mean, VAR told him to look at it. I think that did play a big hand into it, because he obviously thought nothing of it at the time, and VAR must have said something to him, and then came in, he looked at the footage with a predisposed bias, I guess. That's my defense. I mean, from him. Still a poor decision.
Yeah, and
it was overturned, thankfully.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. I think Mitrovic's play acting was absolutely disgusting. I think the
he played star witness in his ban getting overturned, which is kind of funny, really.
It still doesn't excuse, you know, the fact that that was disgusting, though. Like, I do think there should be some sort of ban for that, honestly. Because it's too diving and play acting, it's too prevalent in the game at this moment in time. I think there needs to be some sort of ban for that. I think that's absolutely disgusting.
There's no fans there to play it up either.
Exactly. Like, well, that's still not right if there's fans there.
No, but fans will always get behind their player whether they're diving or not.
Oh, yeah, true.
So that will egg on the raft to make a decision.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I've West Ham fans was disgusting.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, don't get me wrong, like, the decision was fucking horrible, like, but, you know, it goes without saying, you know, sending death threats to his family, that's just mean, you know.
Sending death threats to him is bad enough. To go to his family is even worse.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, I feel like that goes without saying, really. Like, you know,
yeah.
Like,
only one social media website has really stepped up in this abuse of, you know, not just black players, but also referees. Yeah, any kind of celebrity getting any kind of abuse. Thankfully, Instagram stepped up, but not the other ones like Facebook, Twitter, Snapchat, whatever else.
Well, keep going. Fucking Tumblr, LinkedIn. No, but, yeah, I mean, I think there will eventually be some sort of, well, there'll be some, because...
But I think when you're making an app, there shouldn't be any leeway for you to be able to make, for you to use, you know, racial slurs or homophobic slurs, because there's no context where it's good.
Well, yeah, but, like, you know, if they ban the account, like, you know, they just make a new one, like...
They're not, well, yeah, but I mean, like, no, I mean, like, banning the word. So if you want to use that word and then send it out, you shouldn't be able to.
Well, yeah, true.
Yeah. Like, the word fucking and probably, like, bitch, I guess, you should get rid of, because there's, well, you know where the way you're going to be referring to that as a female dog, isn't it? Why would that come up on social media?
Well, I think, you know, well, I think you should be like, I swear, but like, you know.
Yes, but not, but there's no, there's nothing funny or comedic about calling someone a slur.
Oh, yeah, no, don't get me wrong, I'm not sticking up for that at all. I think, yeah, definitely, like, something like that should be in place. I mean, I think the only problem with that is you'll get, like, fucking, like, loony idiots saying, you know, free speech and all that shit. But, you know, somewhat will be done, I'm pretty sure about that.
What? That doesn't even make sense. Free speech is basically the government can't make... Basically what they're doing in China, they can't censor topics. It's not about, you know, words. Like, in what case are you going to be using, let's say, for example, the word faggot? What are you going to be... What good context are you going to be using that in? There's no good context that you can be using that in. Yes, it should be banned.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Talk about fucking meatballs, like, I don't know.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. But, you know, you get idiots. But, you know, I don't want to spend too much time on this topic, because, I mean, you know,
it has been
you've already said one slur, so I don't want you saying anything else.
I didn't say it towards
anyone. Yes, I know, Harry.
Oh my god, this has been before we get a fucking out of context fucking Twitter page, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. No, but I think that, you know, there's no excuse there. But, you know, as for the game, that's really the only talking point. So, you know, we've got one more exciting game. We've got the 3-3 draw between Everton and Man United. Well, I'll let you go first. What's your take on this?
I was so happy when that final whistle came. Oh, that last minute goal was so sweet. I mean, United have come from behind so many times a season and won. And for another team to do it in the last minute, get a point, not win, you know, at no point of return then, is brilliant. It's just ironic.
Yeah.
And for Man United, it was the same old faces for them, really, showing up for them. And then the same old faces fucking up for them.
Yeah.
I think they did deserve way more than a single goal in the first half. Two goals, rather. I think they could have easily wrapped the game up in that first half.
Yeah, they should have done. I mean, you know, like, yeah. Well, I mean, they were 2-0 up, so, you know, that should have been enough, really. I will say one thing positive about Man United. I really like Scott McTominay. I think he's really stepped up in a big way this season. I think he's class.
But why has he got a punchable face?
Because he's Scottish, Harry, that's why. Yeah, but, you know. I don't know about this game. Like, it just really...
Each goal one by one and sort of... You can gather your thoughts that way.
Yeah, go on then, because I'm just chatting up to shite at this point.
Rashford, I mean... I think this is an underrated part of his game, is his crossing slash passing. The way he found Enzo Cavani. And then a few weeks ago, the way he found Greenwood was a brilliant... I don't know what you call it. Where you go from one side of the pitch to the other with a pass.
Switching player.
There you go. Yeah, just the way he's able to do that with precise accuracy is quite incredible. And quite an underrated side of his game. I mean, Cavani in the air, there's always going to be one result, and that was back of the net. I don't think they could have done much about that, Everton. No? Yes?
It was a really good cross for Rashford. I think Rashford... I really do think he's underrated. I don't think people really appreciate how good Marcus Rashford really is. I mean, personally, I'd be starting him for England, to be honest with you. I think he's really good.
Striker or left wing?
I'd start him out on the wing, personally. I think a front four of Grealish, Ford and Rashford and Kane would work really well.
Pogba has to be substituted due to an injury. And then what a goal from Bruno Fernandes. You could argue Pickford was it Pickford or Olsen? I think it was Olsen actually.
It was Olsen.
Olsen should have done better, maybe.
But I mean, that
to try it is quite something.
Yeah. I mean, you know, like, he is a class player. As much as I know you don't like to admit it, he is a class player. He's brilliant.
Everton were looking really poor. And then at kickoff, they almost made it 2-1 before half time. I mean, Calvert-Lewin being slotted in and almost made it 2-1 instantaneously, but. Just whistle past the post. Very close. And I suppose that was a good sign of things to come, because whatever the hell Ancelotti said at half-time kicks him up in the arse, because a shot comes in from Calvert-Lewin, and it's poorly parried to Corey, who slots home. That it's becoming a bit of a common sight from De Gea this season, isn't it?
I'm not sure how long Ole can keep De Gea in his side when he's got Dean Henderson on the bench.
Well, he seems to think he's still the best keeper in the world for some reason. I think you might want to look back at the footage.
Yeah. I think the problem is with De Gea... is that he's on $375,000 a week, so I don't think that he wants to drop him, because Man United can't afford to have a $400,000 a week player sitting on the bench.
They can afford it.
Well, they can afford it, but, you know, it's not good to have that.
3 minutes later, it's 2-2. I mean, completely different Everton to the one we saw in the first half. Doucouré finds James and a beautiful volley into the back of the net. Yeah, I mean, James has been their best player, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's definitely up there, you know, with the likes of Calvert-Lewin, definitely. Yeah, he's really... He had a really fast start, and he sort of slowed down a little bit, but he still has a lot of quality, definitely.
Mm-hmm. I don't know, just... When he plays, Everton look really, really good.
Mm.
Just... They have been... He's been the difference between Everton last season and Everton this season. Especially in how Calvert-Lewin's doing this season. I mean, he's helped him... Well, I suppose Ancelotti's also helped carve his game out as well. Mm. But that the draw doesn't last particularly long because, as you mentioned earlier, McTominay gets the goal. I suppose Everton did drop off, so it was becoming a bit more of a case that United were going to get, you know, a goal.
Mm.
Again, I think that was an error of Olsen. I think he should have got that. Wasn't
it I mean, you know, yeah, it wasn't great, I must admit.
Then Twanzebe comes on, and I don't know, he always looks dodgy when he comes on, because immediately upon coming on, he fouls in not dangerous position, but it gives Everton the last chance of the game, and he gets put through. The ball comes in, and Calvert-Lewin slides one home, and gets that's the last kick of the game. Everton 3, Man United 3. But there was a lot of criticism on De Gea there because he didn't show any authority to want to get the ball. It was always going to be Calvert-Lewin's. And I think...
Yeah, I mean, especially when you've got a player who's that good, the header of a ball, you know.
What? He did like a jumping strike, I guess.
Well, that good in the air, I'll say.
Yeah.
Like, a keeper should be coming out. I mean, I'm not necessarily talking about just that. I'm just saying, like, in general, he's going
to
be dumb.
He doesn't seem to make the 6-yard box his own. He just sort of half-heartedly went for it. And Calvert-Lewin should have never been the favourite to get there. But because De Gea was so off his game that day, well, in fact, both keepers were. Calvert-Lewin salvages a point from, you know, they were 2-0 down. This shouldn't have happened.
Mm. Oh, yeah. I think, especially with the chances that Man United carved out, they definitely did enough to win that game.
Is there much to talk about on the Tottenham West Brom game?
Well, I mean, there's not really too much to say, really. You know, the Spurs looked a different team when Kane come back.
Yeah.
And that's about it, really.
And then a game which probably got no talking points, Wolves, Leicester.
Yeah, it was a dead game. So we'll move on to a more interesting game, Liverpool and Man City. I mean, we've talked about both Liverpool and Man City extensively already in this episode, so we'll try and keep it based on purely this game. Two talking points. Addison. Fucking hell. Alisson was shit, and City absolutely bossed the midfield.
I think that first half was more of the Liverpool we're used to seeing, and I don't know what the hell happened in the second half.
Just secondary. Just second.
All right, yeah, carry on.
Okay, so first half, Liverpool, Liverpool you see in second half, Liverpool dropped off. First half, though, really clumsy challenge, and a penalty is given, and then Gundogan takes it, and he skies it. It seems to be the curse of the Kop end for Man City and penalties at Anfield.
Well, I know Pep has mentioned about Edison potentially becoming a permanent penalty taker for City because, you know, they're not exactly the most clinical when it comes to penalties, Man City, and apparently Edison is a good penalty taker.
Yeah. How do you... I don't get how you sky a penalty that badly. Mahrez did it a few years ago at that very same end, and the game finished 0-0. Thankfully, that wasn't the case here.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's, you know... If you go for a top corner, then, you know, you run the risk of, you know, putting too much sauce behind it.
What's wrong with the Jorginho or the Bruno Fernandes, the hop skip and the shot? Keeping it low, trying to, you know, get the keeper to die the wrong way. There's no sort of mind games in doing that.
Yeah, true. But, you know, then again, you also risk the chance that way of putting it wide, so... Yeah. I'll never have a go at a player for missing a penalty, personally, because, you know...
They are hard.
They're not as easy as people think.
Yeah, but there's a difference between having your penalty saved and having it absolutely skied.
Yeah.
At least it's in the parameter of, you know, the goal.
Yeah, true.
I mean, there have been some absolutely dreadful ones, like Lookman's.
Yeah.
But yeah, second half kicks off in a flurry because Gundogan gets a goal.
You know, like I said, Man City absolutely bossed that midfield. Gundogan was excellent in this game. Foden was excellent in this game. Bernardo Silva was excellent in this game. And yeah, it's just a dominant City performance proving that they are the ones to beat this season. And, you know, whilst, yes, Liverpool have had injury problems, whilst United, you know, are inconsistent, City are the ones to beat. They have probably got the best squad in the league. And yeah, they're proving why this season. They've just been excellent.
Mm-hmm.
Especially after a very slow start as well. Don't forget.
Yeah. Well, we touched on this guy earlier, Ruben Diaz. Bit of a clumsy challenge from him. That he gets booked for and forces a penalty, which Salah will always, you know, fire home. I don't know, and then Jurgen Klopp, maybe he starts to think, maybe we should sit on this lead. So he takes off Curtis Jones and brings on James Milner. And then I believe, was it John Stones? He was offside for a goal.
I think it was Stones, yeah.
Then Gundogan gets set up because of an, I don't know what the hell. Was it this bit? I don't know. I'm trying to remember which goal it was.
Wait, what are you about?
The second goal for Gundogan.
Yeah, what about it?
Oh, was that not an error?
No. Oh, yeah, is that what you're on about, Edwards? Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, the thing is, he got away with one. He got away with trying to play out of the back and making a poor pass a few seconds earlier. So he tries it again. I don't get it. And then it happens again later on. It's...
Did you hear Martin Tyler's Tarzan impression?
No, I didn't hear Martin Tyler's Tarzan impression.
As it was happening.
Right. I'll take your word for that.
I mean, he plays it out. Bernardo Silva gets as close to him as he can, lifts it over for Sterling to head into an open net. And then what a goal from Phil Foden, who we talked about earlier.
Yeah, I mean, this could be the season where we stop talking about Phil Foden as, you know, having all the potential in the world, and where we start talking about him as being a top quality player right now.
And a dominant City performance with, you know, 4-1 over the champions, and Liverpool found themselves sat in fourth with teams like Chelsea, West Ham, Everton, Spurs, Villa, you know, lurking. Because, you know, even if you go as far down to ninth with Villa, they've got two games in hand.
Exactly, yeah. They're not, you know, guaranteed Champions League football by any sense of the means, Liverpool. It's really going to be a slog for them, definitely.
Yeah, should we get into the next game?
Yeah, because we've been going for almost 2.5 hours now, so, yeah.
No way.
Yeah. Yeah. Try and keep this under 3 hours. Yeah, you could watch two games in this stretch of time. Yeah, Sheffield United, Chelsea, go.
I don't think 2-1 was a fair reflection of how we played. Mason Mount breaking the deadlock late in the first half. Timo Werner setting up Mason Mount. And then second half, a goal from nothing because a complete miscommunication at the back finds Rudiger passing into his own net. And then we get a penalty. Was it Werner who won it? I can't remember.
I think it was Werner, yeah, because it was Ramsdale, so...
Oh, yeah.
Ramsdale gave it away, and I think it was Werner.
Yeah, and then, as we mentioned with the Jorginho method earlier, he slots home. I think 2-1 should have... I mean, again, it is Sheffield United. They have got a good defence, but I think we had enough chances to warrant more goals.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. It was a pretty dominant performance. And yeah, again, just another good performance from Tuchel's team, keeping possession. I think we've got over 60% average possession since Tuchel's come in. And yeah, you're just keeping the ball really well, carving out chances. And I think, you know, once Werner's confidence does return, I do think that you will end up scoring a lot of goals. You know, I just think you're lacking that quality finishing right now.
Then Leeds Palace. Brilliant goal from Jack Harrison in the early goings. I don't know, this game was a bit boring, would you say?
Yeah, I mean... I will say that I think Palace are a completely different side without Wilfried Zaha. You know, I mean, I'm not sure how long Zaha's injured for. You know, I mean, there's conflicting reports, but apparently it's going to be, you know, it's not a serious injury. And I think Palace are probably lucky that they are, well, they're basically safe. You know, if you say, you know, you need 35, 36 points, that's two wins, and they will get two wins from 15 games, so they are safe. But, you know, if they were to lose Wilfried Zaha for extended periods of time, I do think they would be in trouble, as is proven by this game against Leeds. I think Leeds absolutely, again, you know, as we've said a couple of times this season, through gritted teeth from my end, Leeds have played really well. And you know, they deserved the win, and it probably could have been by even more, to be completely honest.
Bamford on the score sheet yet again. Rafinha is exciting to watch.
I'm a huge fan of Rafinha personally. I think he was brought in late in the summer window by Leeds. He was a player who, you know, they were targeting for quite a while, and they eventually brought him in. I mean, I think he fits right in to that Leeds side. I think, yeah, he's definitely a really good addition. Just brings a lot of energy to that team.
I mean, wherever he's been, he's always been a bit of a goal scorer, but he's always been very flary, particularly when he was at Sporting and Rennes. He's jumped from club to club, going from Sporting to Rennes to now Leeds, and he's not changed at all. The only criticism would be his finishing. But, you know, when he's on the ball, it's always exciting. There's always something that makes you, you know, something for the highlight reel.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, 100%.
Weird nutmeg of, I can't remember who it was.
I think it was Kouyaté. Well, no, it wasn't Kouyaté because he wasn't playing. I can't remember then. Oh, no, it was Milojevic. That was it.
Aha. Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah. Well, Palace weren't able to create anything because they didn't have any strikers that are on form.
Exactly, yeah. They were just... Well, they ended up just being pinned in their own half.
That being said, I thought Mateta looked pretty decent, but they subbed him off too early for him to even, you know, have a sniff at goal.
Yeah, I mean,
brought on bloody Benteke.
Exactly, yeah. He didn't really have any chances at all to impress, really, Mateta. I don't think he had a shot all game. Against him. Good performance from Leeds and Palace looked poor without Zaha. Like, they're my two takeaways, at least, anyway.
Yeah.
If that's all you've got to say, I think we're done here. Yeah?
Yeah.
Right, well, that's it for us then. Follow me on Twitter at @IWGPCrispyFC, follow Harry at @HazardChelseaFC, and you can follow the podcast at @AntiFootballPod. Right, that's it from us, and we'll speak to you all.